Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tony Hawk was a demon child, then a wizard on the skateboard, then a superstar. For a quarter century now, he's been a hero of the skating world, as it's called. It's been his life and his living, competing, making skateboards, skater clothes, skateboard video games, extreme sport extravaganzas called Boom Boom Huck Jam. If you know him, you know he's huge. If you don't, prepare to meet the master. This hour, On Point skateboarding legend, Tony Hawk, on life on and off the board. You can join the conversation. Who's bigger in your world, Michael Jordan or Tony Hawk? What's Hawk stand for to you? What about his sport? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from La Jolla, California, is legendary skateboarder and entrepreneur Tony Hawk. He grew up in San Diego, where he still lives. He's founder of Birdhouse Skateboards and the popular traveling extreme sports show Boom Boom Huck Jam, which features competitions in motocross, skateboarding, and BMX cycling. At the 1999 X Games, he became the first skateboarder to land a 900, a nearly impossible move that means spinning 900 degrees with skateboard, 2.5 airborne revolutions. His charitable group, the Tony Hawk Foundation, has put millions into skate parks in underprivileged communities. His latest adventure is the release of a hotly anticipated video game, Tony Hawk Ride, complete with wheelless skateboard, which you must ride to play. Tony Hawk, welcome. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
We're really glad to have you. And I wanted to start right off, if you'd be good enough, at that moment, back in 1999, when you first landed a 900. We're going to have listeners who are, you know, hardcore skaters, skateboarders, and others who know nothing about it. I thought it might be a good place to start. Here's the sound from ESPN of that 900-degree turn. Picture a kind of a great big ramp, double-sided ramp, and Tony going back and forth and then up in the air and rolling and rolling and rolling with his 900. Here's ESPN's coverage of the event. Are you kidding me, says ESPN. I mean, they got the music, they got the applause, they got it all going on there. But Tony Hawk, if you'd be good enough, and that's a ways back now, it's 10 years ago, but put us inside your head just as intimately as you can when you, as a master skateboarder, are doing that nearly impossible move the first time. What's going on in your mind and your body to make that happen?
The first time trying it was years prior to that.
Of course.
And it was it was a big risk. I had no idea. I didn't know how it would work. You know, at that point, I had done 720s, which is a double spin in the air, for about 10 years prior to that, prior to actually trying a 900. That's how much further it goes. I mean, like, just to do that extra 180 rotation takes that much more skill and effort to try. And so when I first started trying it, I was getting injured quite a bit. I didn't really have a technique that I thought that I was going to make it, to be honest, you know. And there's a lot of tricks I've tried through the years that I figured out eventually. You know, there was some key element missing that I wasn't getting, and that one, I just, it eluded me. And so I had tried it on and off and sort of gave up on it up until that point at the X Games, because at the X Games, that event that I was doing it at, it was called a best trick event. And basically, you have 20 minutes to try anything. And if you fall, you get back up and try it again. And I did, at that point, what I consider my best trick, which was a varial 720, which means I did a 720 and rotated the board an extra turn under my feet. I thought that was going to take me the entire event. And I made it early on. And the only trick that I hadn't done at that point that I really wanted to do was a 900. And I thought, well, I'll try some and I'll, you know, do some, I'll
see what happens.
The crowd. Right. Yeah.
You tried a number of times, I mean like 10 times before it happened, and then it was finally there. When you're in the midst of doing that and you're sort of rolling over and over, what are your hands doing? Are you holding the board there under your feet?
Yeah, I hold the board. Basically, the whole trick of making it or getting that spin is in what we call the snap. The moment that you leave the ramp and you tuck your body, that's the whole crux of the trick, is if it's going to work or not. And if you do get a good hold of your board so you can keep it to your feet, that's one key. And then getting your body to rotate and being prepared to actually land and be upright and leaning the proper way, that's the other key. And that was the element I was missing all these years.
How many feet above the ramp are you there, Tony, when you're rolling over?
Feet?
Like it looks like about, I don't know, 10, 15 feet in the air, 20, I'm not sure.
Well, from the top of the ramp, it's about 5 or 6 feet.
From the but from what's right below you is
right.
is the base
yeah,
of the
it's
ramp.
Yeah, it's kind of, it all depends on your perspective. I mean, the ramp is about 13 feet tall.
Yeah, okay.
But we don't really consider that because we're pretty confident we're going to land somewhere in the right area of the transition of the ramp. You know what I mean? It's not like we're risking falling to the flat bottom every time.
Listen, but for a non-skateboarder like me, it looks like about a mile and a half and pretty amazing. Let me ask you a really, amateur question here. I mean, we see that other kind of skater, figure skaters, you know, spinning and spinning and spinning. I mean, they can spin, forget 900. I don't know how many rotations they do before they end. The difference in skating is what? You don't have that, you've got no contact with the earth. So you're having to make all this in skateboarding happen just in midair, period.
It's very much a sixth sense. It when you rotate, you really don't have a way to spot where you're going to land. It's all about, does it feel right? Did you feel like the takeoff was right? And are you fully prepared to commit to this landing even if it doesn't work? And that's the whole key to progression, really, in our sport, is believing that it is possible, believing you can do it. And when a moment comes, you just commit to it and you hope for the best. I mean, I don't want to say hope for the best saying that we're leaving caution to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
When we say hope for the best, we're very calculated and we're very aware of our skill set. So we're pretty sure it's going to work, but there's always that chance.
You're 41 now, still by all reports a great skateboarder, but not competing for these last 10 years, but you're still out there up on those high ramps. Would you just take us quickly through the litany of things that you have done to your body with skateboarding over those years? I've read it. It's quite something. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I think it's less than people assume. I have only broken 3 bones in my life, but I've had about 15 concussions. I've had plenty of stitches and abrasions and sprains and things like that, but nothing that's kept me out longer than a few months.
Only 15 concussions.
Well, yeah, the concussions are a little bit questionable just because, you know, people think there might be long-term effects in that, but I haven't noticed any, to be honest.
But we see the kind of amazing spectacle of this, and we see the price that you and many others are willing to pay to do it. I mean, there's a lot of sports that have physical wear and tear and more involved, of course. But what is it about skateboarding? Why this? Why, you know, the sort of little board, the wheels, the earth, and sky? Why skateboarding? What is it that draws a certain kind of person? What's the unique attraction of it, Tony Hawk?
Well, I think that it's as much an art form as it is an activity and a sport. So I like the fact that you can go skate on your own terms, in your own way, and still be part of the community. And I liked that early on. You know, I used to play team sports as a kid, but I never felt like I fit in that well, and I never felt like I was progressing at a rate that I was happy with. And every time I went skating, I learned something new. Even if it was something relatively minor, I felt like I was progressing, and I felt like the entire sport was evolving. And so there is always something new to learn. Doesn't matter how far you get in skating, there's always a new challenge that you can set for yourself. And I love that. You know, I love that there's never a limit to what you can do.
I've read you describing yourself in your very early years as a real tough kid to raise. A kind of, I think your words are something like demon child or devil child.
I think I would have been diagnosed as hyper in those days.
Okay, but here's skateboarding, which has always has had this kind of outlaw, mystique around it. So, is there a connection? Does it draw the demon child, the I don't know, tough kid with way too much energy for some reason? And again, why skateboarding?
No, that wasn't the allure. To me, it was something my friends were doing in my neighborhood. My older brother was very into it, and I liked it. I liked the community aspect of it. And then I got a chance to go to the skate park about a year after I started skating, and I saw these guys literally flying out of empty swimming pools, and I thought, that's it. That's what I want to – that I aspire to. I want to fly. And that's what drew me in. It wasn't about the attitudes or hairdos or misfits. It was more about this amazing – almost – a acrobatic you know, style of skating and the way that people could actually fly in the air, and they were just figuring out what was possible, and I thought, I want to be part of that movement.
And now your son Riley is doing it. You were 8 or 9 when you started. How old's Riley?
He is going to be 17 next week.
And he's deep into it. We'll come back and talk about the community and the movement. I mean, you've helped in part build that community and movement. Your name kind of synonymous with it these days. You happy to bear this, I don't know, the accolade of, you know, Mr. Skateboard? I guess it's your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I really wanted to have put upon me. I wasn't looking to be a spokesperson or ambassador by any means, but at the same time, I'm happy to spread the word of skating and in a positive manner. You know, I mean, I think that there are people that know my name outside of our industry and associate me with skating, and so I'm happy to, I don't want to say bear that cross, but to be the one telling people about it and to explain to them the positive influences of it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with skateboarding legend Tony Hawk about his sport and life on and off the board. He joins us from studios in La Jolla, California. He's author of A Hawk, Occupation Skateboarder, a memoir a couple of years back, out with a new video game called Tony Hawk Ride. We'll talk about that. You can see video of him at his art, as he puts it, at our website, onpointradio.org. And Tony, we've got a lot of callers. Let's go right to Salt Lake City, Utah, and Carlos. Carlos, you're on the air with Tony Hawk.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Well, what do you see? What do you know?
Well, I'm originally from California, and I remember long ago when I was a kid, I saw Tony skate over at Lance Mountain's house. And if I remember correctly, Christian Nassoy was there, a bunch of the old Peralta guys. I mean, my first skateboard was a Tony Hawk Peralta, you know. And I you know, my question, Tony, is just, you know, back then, did you think that skateboarding was going to, you know, explode the way it is? I mean, with X Games, with all this stuff, or did you think it was going to stay underground? And also, by the way, my first poster that I ever put up on my wall when I was a kid was one of your things in Thrasher magazine.
Oh, thanks,
Thrasher.
Carlos.
All right, so we're going back decades here. How about it, Tony?
You know, I never imagined it to be as big as it is today. I mean, it was not. You know, people say, "Did you ever dream about all this?" And I thought, well, none of this was really possible. You know, to aspire to be a professional skateboarder when I was a kid just meant that you got your picture in a magazine and maybe you got some free equipment. And that was about it.
Where did skateboarding
come? To see it get this big, yeah. It's like a dream that was never realized back then. And so the answer is, I thought we were at the pinnacle in the 80s when people recognized us, you know, for being good skaters on an underground level.
In Lance's backyard.
Well, I mean, Lance is that's kind of a downplay. Like Lance Mountain is a very popular skateboarder, and so his ramp was pretty legendary in the skate industry.
Okay,
to have some of the pros there, and so, but it was.
We're not talking a bucket and two boards there,
right? But by all means, it was just a backyard ramp. So that, you know, there were very few skate park facilities in those days. So no, I never imagined it to be this big. I just wanted to keep doing it.
Carlos, thanks for your call. Let's get another right here. Julie in Nashville. Julie, you're on the air with Tony Hawk.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about my son, Julian, who is 15, and I kind of pushed him into skateboarding when he was about 8. I saw it as a good sport for him. He never really took to team sports, but I saw this, you know, as an individual sport, and I pushed him, and he loved it and had a talent for it, and, you know, since he's 15 now, but he's grown away from it and gone on to team sports, but for those 6-7 years, it was real important to him, and I saw it as a great way to learn a sport and learn team sports, because the skateboarders, the mentality, they're just so supportive of one another, and I just got a thrill out of going to the skate park and watching him. I was never afraid for him. I always knew he was careful. He was never a daredevil kid, and I saw this as a way for him to be, you know, I wanted to push that a little bit and not be so afraid.
Julie, that's great. Let us take it to Tony. Tony, you must recognize that story. That's about the same age, eight or nine, that you started skateboarding. It worked for Julie's son. It worked for you. What works? What gets its teeth into you?
I think there is a lot of camaraderie in the mm-hmm. skate world, for sure. You know, even though it is an individual pursuit, a lot of people are willing to help you, and there's sort of this collective effort to progress the sport. And I think you're right. You know, it definitely teaches you a lot about self-confidence and self-motivation. And if, as long as you have a sense of mortality, you know, you can set your own limits. But I think that I feel the same way. You know, it gave my son a sense of identity and really a sense of community. And a lot of his friends were born from the skate world. And it's funny, though, that you say you pushed your son into skating, because when I was a kid...
Right.
No parents pushed their kids into skating. In fact, they had to hide it from their parents.
Right.
I was lucky in that my parents were supportive, but they didn't necessarily push me into it. I just found it on my own.
I mean, how did skating get that reputation? I remember that. It was sort of almost like, you know, sneaking cigarettes on the sides, skateboarding,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think it was – well, there were a few different elements. Skating was sort of born out of surfing, and surfers had a bad rap in those days just as being sort of slackers.
Mm-hmm.
And then once skating was sort of died in popularity, the hardcore skaters really took to the streets and also to public property, empty swimming pools, you know, private swimming pools in people's backyards.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't really good for the reputation of skaters in general, that they had to trespass to do their own sport. And so, you know, there were a lot of stigmas back then, but I feel like we've broken out of that in terms of acceptance, because there are a lot more facilities, there's a lot more support, a lot more positive coverage of skating now.
But there's still a sensitivity out there. I mean, you got some headlines just last summer. You were for Father's Day at the White House, brought your board with you, and I don't know, did a little skateboarding down the hall of the old executive office building, and people really lit out after you. Tony Hawk, who do you think you are? What are you doing with your skateboarding
yeah.
in the White House zone?
Yeah, it's ironic, because I was actually invited there because of my success as a skateboarder. You know, it was, to me, it was just like a celebration of how far I'd come, and all I did was ride across the tile of the hallway. That was about it. You know, I wasn't grinding the statues or anything like that.
Right, right. Not the president's desk.
Yeah,
in the Oval Office.
Somehow they thought that was disrespectful. When I thought, how is that disrespectful? When that was, you know, this is my livelihood. This is my passion. Like, this is what I believe in the most, and this is what has made me the father I am in a lot of ways. And that's why I'm there. So I think people just took it the wrong way. They thought it was some sort of snub to the administration, but not at all. It was really just more of a joy thing. And it's funny, because the same day they had high school kids playing football out on the lawn
mm-hmm.
Of the
no
White
problem.
House. And no problem. I mean, literally ripping up the lawn.
Right. As long as it's football cleats, we're fine. You know, I wanted to ask you, I mean, is there a particular kind of kid or person that skateboarding speaks to? A person with a certain need to express themselves, I don't know, very individually, with that sort of completely free form, open field of things you can do, the art of it, as you say. And what's the profile? Is there a profile?
I think there might have been in the past, because it was very, it was hard to find. And, you know, it was definitely a certain type of person that was willing to forego everything else. And basically, in the past, if you skated, the only people that appreciated what you did were skaters themselves. You know what I mean? It was a very underground movement.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is a fan base for skating. People that like to watch it on TV don't necessarily ever do it. And so it's a different now. It's different. It's more accessible. It's more mainstream. It's not a certain type of personality. And there are plenty of leisure skaters, people that just dabble in it but do other things as well. And that just wasn't the case when I was younger. It was, you either skated or you didn't.
And it's now linked to this whole world of extreme sports. You've helped make that link with your sort of traveling extravaganza, boom, boom, huck jam, lots of big hip-hop music and wild stuff going on with motocross, motorcycles and bikes and skateboards. What do you make of the rise of extreme sport in American culture? Very popular now. Skateboarding's just a piece of that, but what is it about the whole realm that's drawn such a following?
I think it's really this. It's more about the MTV generation and the constant action that they desire. You know, I don't want to dismiss team sports at all, but kids nowadays, they want constant movement. You know, they don't want to wait for the next play or for the next pitch. They want it to be instantly accessible, instant action, and they like the instant gratification that it provides, especially with these types of sports. And also, you know, it looks spectacular. It seems very dangerous, and that's exciting to kids these days. I think, you know, with my tour, the Huck Jam, I've included skateboarding, BMX, and motocross. And to me, those are the three most exciting sports from our genre, which people like to call extreme. I call action sports. And I thought there must be a way to do this and do our sports as a show as opposed to a competition. And that's really what I set out to do. It's been a lot of fun, you know. And I think that kids appreciate it. They really like the choreography elements to that sort of thing, because usually even though they are grouped together by the media, these sports are all very different. We use different terrains, we use different tricks and techniques, and there's different mentalities, to be honest.
Danger involved and way up in the air. I can't help thinking when I look at it that it is, in a way, there's some old impulse here to get to the frontier. I mean, you end the geographic frontier and people look for something else. It looks like kids who want to get beyond rules. You know, the world is too confining for them, maybe.
I don't know. I've never thought of it on such a grandiose scale, but I just love the acrobatics of it. You know, that's what I always have loved. And the technical aspects of it. I mean, skateboarding in itself, if you get into what we consider the basic tricks, is very technical and very difficult to master. Kids appreciate that. You know, they like that it's a challenge and that they have to – they can't just get on it and be instant masters. I think they like that, you know. And they also appreciate the really finer aspects of technical skating, which, to be honest, when I was young and even in the last – say 10, 15 years ago, no one understood that unless they were fully embedded in the industry.
And now there's a kind of literature or shared understanding of it. We've got people lined up for miles with their skateboards here to talk to you. Jeff in Charleston, South Carolina. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Tony. How are you?
We're good. We're good.
I don't have a question. Just wanted to thank you, Tony. I grew up with skateboarding since I was a little kid, and I'm 31 these days. Haven't been skateboarding as much as I like to. I'll pick it up every once in a while, but I do still have an old Power Parappa board in the garage, and it's a Lance Mountain board. My buddies, when they come over, we'll get together every once in a while, and you know, it's not something that everybody can stick with as long as they can. Not everybody's got the talent that you have, but it really helped create some great memories, and you were an idol for me and all my buddies when we were growing up, you and the whole Peralta crew, and just wanted to say thanks.
Why was Tony an idol for you, Jeff, if I may ask? Why?
He made it look so easy. You have something about you, Tony, that when you get up there, you know, you don't exactly have the build for it. You're tall and skinny, but for some reason or another, you just really made it always look easy, and it made it seem like it was something that little kids could you know, could end up doing one day. Like, you're about 10 years older than me, so when I was, you know, 8 and 9, you were 18 and 19, so, you know, it was something to aspire to at the time.
That's great. Tony, I mean, I've read that partly because you're a tall guy, like 6'3", kind of lanky, and people would say, oh, you know, he's going to crash, it can't work, he's too long, he's too lanky, and it made it all the more magical, I guess, when it did, as it so often did work.
Well, I think that was another draw into skating, is that you didn't have to be this sort of, you know, muscular jock build to excel at it. It took all kinds. I mean, but to be honest, I grew up as a runt. I was pretty short. In fact, I was always mistaken for being in grades much lower than I was in until the time I was about 16 years old, and that's when I got tall. So I learned to adapt once my body grew like that, but I was always a very skinny kid, and I think that's why I liked it, because I didn't have to... You know, I didn't have to be tall. I didn't have to be this way or that way. I could just skate, and people accepted that.
Nini in Lisbon, New York. You're on the air with Tony Hawk, Nini.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tony. Hi. I have a few things to say that I love skateboarding, and I wanted to just share them with you. I brought my kids down to Albany, New York for the Boom Boom Huck Jam Tour.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big deal. I don't have a lot of money, and I'm like, oh, we got to get down there and see these skateboarders. And we did, and it was fantastic. We loved it. And my youngest son is a big skateboarder, and that's his thing. He skateboards till dark up here. You know, we're on the border, so it gets dark at about 3:30 right now.
Right.
But he skateboards all the time. And I'm really happy to see kids out on their skateboards. Like, they're all over town. People don't like them a lot. This is a very old area. But they're out there skateboarding all over. And I also wanted to tell you, I grew up on a skateboard, and I'm in my 50s. And I lived in San Diego in the 70s, where there was a lot of skateboarding and surfing.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. And I think it's a great alternative for kids who don't want to be on teams and team sports, which I feel are really overrated. There's a lot of pressure with team sports. And I'm just really happy that you've put skateboarding on the map and mainstreamed it a little.
Hey.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Kudos for your Nina, is it something what I was trying to get at, I guess, clumsily, but that sort of sense of skateboarding somehow supporting people with a little bit of an alternative view of the universe, and I hear a little of that in what you're saying, Nina.
Yeah, and I would say it's actually Nini, I have to tell
Nina,
you.
Thank you.
My son's Nini. My son's name is Hayden, but he is a different kid. He's always been kind of a different kid. He loves skateboarding. He loves tea. He loves snowboarding. He just seems to fit this whole other thing, and that's not a big thing up here. That's not a main, you know, cool area to be in up here. These are, you know, the main sports, basketball, soccer, baseball.
But he's carrying the torch.
Area.
Yep, but he's carrying that torch, and we hear it. Nini, thank you very much for that. How about it, Tony Hawk? What, does that sound like a typical of the profile of the skateboard community that you're talking about?
I think it does, yeah, but also in this day and age, it's so much more accessible that there are plenty of kids that do enjoy team sports in addition to skateboarding. You know what I mean? There isn't that great separation that there was 15, 20 years ago. So, but I do identify with that. I mean, I definitely thought I was I liked doing different things when I was a kid, and when I saw skateboarding and what it provided to me, and the sort of attitudes of the other guys that were involved, I really enjoyed that. I thought it was something different, and I wasn't necessarily excelling or enjoying the team sports I was involved with. So I totally identify with that. And so, you know, to say there's a certain type of personality, definitely there is a certain type of personality that is drawn to skating very strongly. But nowadays, like I said, it's so much more diverse that you don't have to be of that particular personality to enjoy it on a leisurely basis.
And now you're deep in the video game version of it as well. We'll talk about that. But the innovation this time with this latest rendition is you've got a kind of a, looks like a hoverboard from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Sort of a electronic. You actually stand on a board with the Nintendo Wii and do...
Or any system.
Oh, any system, okay. But
yeah.
Is that kind of Wii physically into it? I mean, millions of these video games have sold over the years just with a joystick. People really satisfied to skateboard, you know, on a couch?
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with skateboarding legend Tony Hawk about his sport and life on and off the board. Tony Hawk joins us from La Jolla, California. I've got a board from the new game right in front of me here, and it looks for all the world like that, what was it, Marty, somebody in Back to the Future sort of flying around. No wheels on this. It's hooked up to a screen, or I guess, it's got a wireless connection to the screen, and it really responds as the skateboard responds, so the figure on the video screen does what a human would midair or up on the railings, Tony?
Mostly, but to be honest, the skateboard itself is it's a little bit more subtle movements that trigger the move. So it's not like you have to be an experienced skateboarder, a professional skateboarder, to get this thing going. It's very much, you know, just kicking it up in a fast motion sets you into what we call an ollie, and then giving it a tilt in any direction will set the board flipping. So it's not like you physically have to maneuver the board that in such big ways. We wanted to make it accessible to anyone, you know, even if you don't have never skated, and to feel that exhilaration. And I'm really proud of it. I mean, it is a blast, and especially to see, you know, inexperienced people who have never skated, moms, dads, even young children get on it and all of a sudden just be jumping around and flying, you know, grinding big handrails and jumping over building gaps and things like that. It's really fun.
43.5 million of these Tony Hawk video game titles sold worldwide. That's incredible. And we're talking a billion plus bucks there. There were times very early in your life where you were making good money just competing. And I think, what, you had a house when you were still a teenager and all that, just, but it fell apart. I mean, skateboarding has come and gone as a popular thing, and you sometimes got caught in the trough when it was just out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was, you know, right when I was graduating high school, it was skating was relatively big. It was the 80s, and there was a surge of popularity, and then it sort of died very quickly in the early 90s. And by then, you know, like you said, I had actually bought a house when I was a senior in high school, and all of a sudden there were very few prospects of making a living as a skater, and it was hard. And I had just started a family. I really didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know if I could stick with it, but I never wanted to quit. So I started a skate company at the time.
Skateboard and, building your own skateboards.
Yeah, which seemed like an extremely risky prospect, but at the same time, it was an easy way to get your foot in the door as a skate company, because skating was relatively small. So to be known as one of the top skate companies wasn't that hard at the time. And that was with the belief that it was going to come back in popularity. Which lost, it did in a way that we never imagined.
But not until after some bumps, lost the house, lost the marriage. I mean, that was yeah. a tough time.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, it was. But like I said, through and through, I never could give up on skating. I loved it so much that I had to keep doing it, even when it wasn't to very little avail.
Let's go to Mandy in Cape Coral, Florida. Mandy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Hello.
My son recently turned 10, and we went and bought him his first new skate.
Oh, Mandy, we're losing you there.
No.
You bought it. You 10 years old into skateboard, and we got that much. It's interesting to hear moms calling in, sort of encouraging their kids onto the skateboard. That's got to mean something about a change in reputation.
Yeah, I know. That's something I'll never get used to.
Well, that's wild. Let's go to Steve in Columbia, South Carolina. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Tony. Pleasure to talk
Hi.
To you both.
Hi.
I'm mainly wondering how you remain marketable to, like, these moms who are getting their kids into skateboarding and are totally for it, yet you remain legit in the eyes of the more hardcore skaters, like the kids that are more into, like, the Bam Margera aspect of skating and the subculture, as it were.
Steve, I'm not hip to this. The Bear Margera aspect, what's that?
Oh, he's speaking of guys like Bam and the sort of Jackass crew and the more what we consider the more hardcore element of skating, you know, that's not the sort of well, what I do is more on ramps, but he's thinking of more of the street element, the guys who are out in the street skating
right.
handrails and benches and stuff
right,
like that.
Right. Steve, if I may ask you, Steve, we'll get Tony on that, but what does hardcore mean to you when you say hardcore skater?
You know, the kids who are quick to shoot anything down as soon as it becomes mainstream, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. That sort of rebel wing that's out there. Tony, how about how do you keep it going on both sides? The moms with the 10-year-olds and the hip rebels.
Well, I can tell you that it's not some master plan of mine. I don't really have a concise answer.
Yeah.
All I can say is I never quit skating. You know, I walked the walk. I think that's my only secret is that I never, you know, I didn't present myself as someone like and resting on my accolades to say that, oh yeah, I you know, I was a pro skater and here I am still. I what I say is I'm still skating. I mean, literally, I was skating yesterday. I did a big exhibition in Paris last weekend where I pulled a 900. Like I never quit doing this stuff, and I think that people appreciate that. You know, they appreciate the dedication to it. I hope.
You're still doing 900s in Paris at 41. That's pretty good. Chris in Boston, you're on the air with Tony Hawk.
Hi guys, thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hey, I was curious. I'm a father of a bunch of kids and a couple of them skateboard, and I'm a snowboarder. And my wife is very opposite, and she considers all things related to this lifestyle gateways to the drug world. It's sort of a funny argument we have sometimes. She's half serious and half not. Tony, how do you address any concern you get that the snowboarding and the skateboarding culture, it all leads to bad behavior later on in life because of, do you hear that a lot, and how do you deal with it?
I just think that's a bad stereotype of our cultures. I think that if you look at any big, well, you know, it's so diverse now that definitely you could pick pockets that are like that. You know, there are pockets that maybe people are doing a lot of drugs, but there are definitely pockets of people like I know, my good friends, are responsible parents and responsible adults, and they are professional skateboarders. It just depends on where you want to look. And you could do that throughout any sports, really. You know what I mean? You could look at there's a bad element to football, but there are plenty of good role models in football as well. And so I think that it's just a matter of where our sports came from, and there's still a stigma attached to that where they say, you know, it came from the surfing community, or skating was more the outlaw, the rebellious type of activity, and it came from punk rock. And so I just think it's not really a valid argument, because it covers so much ground now. Skating has so many different types of people doing it.
That's clearly the case. But at the same time, Chris, you're still talking about this lifestyle around snowboarding, skateboarding. When you say this lifestyle, what do you mean? Your wife has a certain idea. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, first of all, I'm an avid snowboarder, so I'm in this lifestyle that she refers to half the time, and I'm not a drug user either. So I don't know if she knows what lifestyle she's referring to, but it's the whole, it's the more of the image of the people skateboarding in the public parks and going over the public areas and some of the in-your-face lifestyle Tony's absolutely right. It's not just skateboarding. It's any athlete these days who wants to make a name for himself. It's in this public eye. It's the in-your-face attitude almost of it. I happen to like it, by the way. I just think it's funny we have the same argument all the time when she tries to get him to not skateboard. And I say, this is ridiculous. It's a healthy activity.
I mean, it looks to me that lifestyle is, in a way, kids looking for freedom in a world where it's hard to find freedom sometimes.
I would agree, yeah. Hey, I do appreciate the call.
Chris, thank you very much for being there. Brandon in Salt Lake City, you're on the air with Tony Hawk.
Hi, Tom and Tony. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I kind of have to reflect exactly what your last caller said with the drugs. I've been skateboarding, actually just found out, I just did the math, about 16 years now. My dad originally put a little banana board in my hands at the age of 8 years old and said, hey, go ride and have some fun. He's from Santa Cruz, so he was a surfer bum when he was a kid. And so, you know, with the drugs and everything. Now, also on that, with the games, I start off with the very first PlayStation game, the first Tony Hawk game, and that was just a blast. When you're jumping and doing all these crazy tricks you can never even imagine doing on a regular skate deck, it was a lot of fun. But the nice thing about that was that whenever I was broken or bruised from skateboarding, I'd go in and play the game, and then it just got me re-energized and really wanting to replay or go back out and skateboard.
The game as in the video game, when you're off your feet on the board, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. Brandon, I appreciate your call. People playing it both ways there, Tony, up on the board or, on the couch, or now on the board inside
right.
No wheels.
Yeah. Right.
It just keeps going. Let's get one more. Walford, Connecticut. Sean, you're on the air with Tony Hawk.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing? Tony, I'd like to say that you're a great guy. I really respect you, and I followed you over the years. And I'm in the world of narcotics. I'm a detective. And what I'd like to see you do is just a little bit more pushing of anti-drug, anti-cigarettes, anti-alcohol to these young kids coming up. I think that's a good message to add to your positive business.
Mr. Hawk, how about it?
Well, I do. I mean, I do that very much in terms of just promoting the way that I live. You know, I don't want to come on too strong. And I mean, kids are so savvy these days. They know if something is forced. And all I can do is live by example and tell you that, this is how I live. I'm a responsible adult. I'm not on drugs. I love my sport. I love my livelihood. I love what it provides me. But to come out and just that's your only message is the no drug thing, you know, that really turns kids away. And so I definitely want to promote that as best that I can, but I have to do it in my own way, in my own, and just do it through my example.
So it's not going to be you on the poster with the anti-drug message, but what, a sort of a bigger message about...
Well, I mean, I have done a little bit of that stuff as well, like anti-smoking campaigns. I've definitely been part of those. But at the same time, you know, I want to live by example, I'm looking to be a role model for my children, and if that transcends my own children to other kids around the world, that I'm happy with that. But it's not like I set out to be the role model for everyone. By all means, you know, I I have my own flaws as well, but I want my kids to look up to me for sure.
Tony, while we're in that zone, let me ask you about, everybody's talking this week, sadly, about Tiger Woods and the whole incident in his driveway, you know, the Escalade run into the phone pole of the tree or whatever it was, the 9-iron through the back window by his wife. There's a very big celebrity. I've seen you compared to his stature in your world, very much in the public eye. What do you think about what's happened with Tiger Woods this week, Tony?
Yeah, I don't really think about it that much. I feel bad that the guy has to live under so much scrutiny. You know, I mean, you know, maybe he has made some mistakes and whatnot, but so have so many other people. They just don't live in this public fishbowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
that
a fish
he does,
bowl.
And you know, and from what I've seen, like, you know, in terms of legalities, he doesn't have to talk to the police. He had his own fender bender accident. No one else was involved, so. Mm-hmm. I just feel like leave the guy alone and let him, you know, if they do have problems, let him work it out.
Hartford, Connecticut. Eric, you're on the air with Tony.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tony. Very excited to be talking to both of you. I wanted to disagree with the last couple callers. I'm 33 years old. Obviously, you know, I had pictures of Tony Hawk all up over my wall. And it wasn't I was against team sports. It was I was a child, my mom is a single mom. It was, she just couldn't get four kids to team sports.
Right.
Skateboarding allowed us to, you know, it was an individual sport that I could do anywhere.
Hmm, yeah.
And I'd like to say that that led to, I took up judo just after high school, and I've been doing it now for 15 years. And skateboarding, for starters, you know, it's a great form of exercise. You know, the strength you get in your feet, the balance, the core strength that it takes. As it led, you know, it led again to an exercise of a martial art, and the wobbling that I trained on a skateboard has made me a better, you know, hobbyist as a martial artist. And, you know, far, far away from the drug culture that I think is, I simply don't understand how it's associated with skateboarding, or any extreme sports, because I can't imagine trying to do a backflip on a motorcycle when you're high on anything.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's brought you to the zen of judo in the end, Eric.
It's true. I mean, it's and I would very much say that you know, 8-10 years of skateboarding as a child and as a teenager led me down this road of kind of a individual pursuit in a really welcoming and supportive community.
Hey, that's great, Eric, and we're very glad to hear it. Tony, you got him off on the right foot. You know, a single mom, couldn't all get to practice, but had the skateboard at hand.
And also, there is a healthy lifestyle benefit to that. I mean, if you look around, you see the hardcore skaters. there are no overweight skaters out there. You know, it takes a a lot of physical dedication and exercise to do this, and it's not like people are working out trying to prepare for their skating. They're just out there skating, and that is giving them enough exercise.
Talk to us about the technical, I don't know, final frontier of skateboarding. You pulled off that 900 in 1999. You've done it, I don't know, 10 or a dozen times since then. But what's left? I mean, where can humans go with a board and their feet and gravity? What's left to do?
Oh, there's plenty. I mean, they're still testing new ground in terms of distance and height. I mean, if you've seen the sort of in the X Games, they have this what's called the big air, the mega ramp movement. Now these guys are jumping 70-foot gaps. They're going 20 feet above the lip that is already 30 feet high, and that's giving them a whole new set of possibilities in terms of how they can spin and how they can flip their board, and there's just more air time. I mean, if you're looking at the sort of aerial tactics of that side of skating. And then in terms of the technical aspects of the hardcore skating, people are still doing, they're still learning new tricks. You know, they're learning to flip their boards and then land into a very difficult maneuver, grinding maneuver, and then flip their boards out of that. And that kind of stuff just didn't exist 10 years ago.
That's pretty good. How long can a 41-year-old guy stay in the game, Tony Hawk?
You know, I guess I'm the guinea pig. So
we'll find out.
I don't make ultimatums. I feel like I've still got most of my tricks. I'm still learning. I'm gonna still be out there until I am terrible at it.
Well, that could take a while. If you just did a 900 in Paris last week, I guess you're still doing all right. Tony Hawk is with us today from La Jolla, California. Tony Hawk, the ride is Tony Hawk Ride is just out, the latest version of the video game. Tony, it's been great talking with you. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Wonderful to have you as well. Listeners, for all those we could not get on, we know you're there. We appreciate your calls. And thanks to those who were with us today. You can see video of Tony Hawk at our website, onpointradio.org. Here's more soundtrack from the new video game, Can You Feel It? The geeks were right from The Faint, no less. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.